ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद् भागवत गीता एज इट इज ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Nahi kaschit kshanamapi
Nahi kaschit kshanamapi
Jatu tishtatya karmakrit
Jatu tishtatya karmakrit
Karyate hi avasha karma
Karyate hi avasha karma
Sarvah prakriti jair gunai
Sarvah prakriti jair gunai
Nahi kaschit kshanamapi
Nahi kaschit kshanamapi
Jatu tishtatya karmakrit
Jatu tishtatya karmakrit
Karyate hi avasha karma
Karyate hi avasha karma
Sarvah prakriti jair gunai
Sarvah prakriti jair gunai
Translation of the verse. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Purport. It is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Does everyone understand what that means? It is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Can you understand? What does it mean? Could you say it to me in more simple English?
Without the body, we are active.
Desires, and we are always active.
Now, the point I get from this is that there's an idea that when one is liberated, then there's no activity. So Srila Prabhupada says it's not a question of embodied life, because even when we're not in a material body, it is the nature of the soul to be always active. So this statement that one is active always is applicable in the embodied state and in the liberated state. That's the point I get from this. Continuing. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. You can all understand. Most people don't understand. We can understand because we've been enlightened by the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita through the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, most people don't understand. The material body can't move. If the body doesn't move, if it's dead, people say, they say, well, the heartbeat stopped, the breathing stopped, the various circulation systems within the body stopped. The body is dead, that's why it doesn't move. But what is the difference between life and death? We have learned from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And frankly speaking, even most Indians who call themselves Hindus and superficially believe in reincarnation also don't understand anything about this. They just have an idea that there is reincarnation, but how it works, they don't know, unless they study Srila Prabhupada's books. So, continuing Srila Prabhupada's purport, the body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by illusory energy. In contact with material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes, and to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the shastras. But if the soul is engaged in his natural function of Krishna consciousness, whatever he is able to do is good for him. The Srimad Bhagavatam affirms this. Tyagdva swadharmang charanam bhujam harer bhajanna pakvota patetato yadi yatra kava vabhadram abhud amushya kim ko varta apto bhajatang swadharmatah. If someone takes to Krishna consciousness, even though he may not follow the prescribed duties in the shastras, or execute the devotional service properly, and even though he may fall down from the standard, there is no loss or evil for him. But if he carries out all the injunctions for purifications in the shastras, what does it avail him if he is not Krishna conscious? So the purificatory process is necessary for reaching this point of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sannyas, or any purificatory process, is to help reach the ultimate goal of becoming Krishna conscious, without which everything is considered a failure. So you may wonder why among the 700 or so verses of the Bhagavad Gita I chose to speak on this one. Let's read it again and then you can wonder again. Nahi kaschik shanamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit karyate hi avashak karma sarva prakriti jayagunaihi. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So the reason I chose to speak on this was because when Dal Govinda Prabhu was kindly driving me from the airport to this small town, the name of which I can't remember, from Frankfurt Airport, in the course of our discussion, he spoke about how one of the reasons he feels it is very difficult to preach or spread Krishna consciousness here is because Germans in general are so absorbed in working hard. Right? That's a famous trait of the Germans. Now, the first thing that we learn if we study Bhagavad Gita is that we're not the body. You're not German. You're not Indian. Who do you want to win the World Cup cricket? India, right? Well, what the hell does it matter anyway? But we're not the body. I often give the example that people in Germany, you don't have such a consciousness, but in India it's very prominent, especially in North India, especially on the Delhi side, as you get over toward Pakistan, there's always this idea, we don't like Pakistan, especially on that side, because you're fairly close to the border, and if Pakistan army was to invade, then Delhi would be very close, or if they're to send. So there's a feeling of anti-Pakistan, or anti, among the Hindus, anti-Muslim. There's some feeling like that. Not all of them. So I often give the example that if someone at the time of death is thinking very strongly how much they don't like Pakistan, what will happen? In the next birth, they'll get born in Pakistan. And then they'll be thinking, we don't like India. So we're not the body. It's the first thing we learn in Krishna consciousness. At the same time, we are to apply the teachings of Bhagavad Gita in every sphere of life. Including cultural and social. Here, Krishna says that everyone acts helplessly according to the modes of material nature that they have acquired. And we see that although there are very broad generalizations by which we can say that in general, the German psyche, or the stereotype of the German psyche, is... You okay there, translator? Yeah. Doing okay? These are words from, I guess it's what is that, Greek? But it's from your Freud and Jung, who are German speakers. So we're talking about psyche. So it's considerably different from the Italian psyche, and even the values. Germans work very hard, and although we're not supposed to be racialistic in these politically correct days, but they think that Italians, they don't work hard like us. And Italians think, well, those Germans, they're so stupid working hard all the time. They don't know how to enjoy themselves. So there are national differences. in culture, outlook, psychology, attitudes. Everyone is born in a certain situation due to their previous mentalities and activities. So people with a similar mentality in a previous life all get, and a similar karmic matrix, get born in the same situation so that they can all be together and feel very German or Italian or whatever. And Germans are famous for and pride themselves upon being very hard-working, of the quality of their work. Yeah, please listen. Don't take photos. Just listen. If you like, I'll sit here afterwards and you can, I'll smile and you can photo me. But please just listen now, because this is important. We're discussing topics of Bhagavad Gita. This hard-working men, and both quality and quantity of German work has made the German economy so powerful. Of course, there are hippie Germans also, but the that is the national trait. It's not only restricted to India. There are the emerging economies, as in India. It's now one of the world's major economies. Still nothing. Economically, the situation is nowhere near Germany's in terms of per capita, or the individual. The average Indian earns much less than the average German, but by hard work, it's coming up. And really, it's by hard work. It doesn't come just by doing puja, as Dr. Radhakrishnan would know, was very much aware of, because Pandit Nehru, he said that his idea was that, not only his idea, but that Indians have to work very hard, we have to have factories and dams, because all this religion, India has gone behind in terms of technology and economic progress. One devotee I know, he's a disciple of mine from Chennai, South India. He told me that before he joined ISKCON as a full-time brahmachari, he was working in a company, something like this, quality control or something, of manufactured goods, something like that. And his boss told him that there's no need for you to go home. We have showers, we have beds, we can phone the pizza company, and you just eat minimally, sleep minimally, and you can have a shower from time to time, and there are toilets, and all the rest of the time just work. Why do you want to do anything else? So that mentality is coming there also. Just work, 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 work. Now, it might be that some people, just like the boss I was telling, just talking about, they might be very happy to hear that, well, you have to, everyone has to work at every moment. So, oh, that's good. We want to work at every moment. Of course, here in this verse, the term karma is used in, one of the most important topics of Bhagavad Gita. In one sense, the whole of the Bhagavad Gita is a discussion of karma. Should Arjuna perform his swakarma, his prescribed work as a kshatriya of fighting, or shouldn't he? Krishna here says that everyone has to work at every moment. What does that mean? You're not working now, are you? I'm working. I'm doing my job. That's what I'm supposed to. But you're listening. Listening is not usually considered work. Or when you're sleeping, you're not working. Is it? That's not working. But here the term karma is used in a very broad sense of activity. And everyone is engaged in activity at every moment. Even when we're sleeping, we may say, well, that's not activity, but we are interacting with the environment. We're lying down on the earth or on a bed, and we therefore become obliged to the earth for providing the place to us for us to sleep on. Now, this might not be understood by people who take the earth for granted, but actually the earth is a goddess who provides us a place to live and to sleep and to work in. Someone made the bed, so we're obliged to them for being on that. And even by breathing, that's some kind of activity. Karma, apart from work, it also means activity. And even if we hold our breath, well, that's also an activity. So at every moment, there is some activity. And every activity we perform within material existence that generates, well, within human existence, every activity generates karmic reactions. So Krishna is here telling Arjuna, who wanted to leave his karma, leave his prescribed duty of fighting, that you can't stop acting. You're going to go on acting, even if you think that you're not going to act. So back to the question, yes. Why do Germans work so hard? Well, if you ask the average German, they probably don't even think about it, do they? It's just normal. It's just what everyone else does. It's the culture they're born into, and they just take it as normal. It's their duty. If you ask them why you're working, well, to get food and a house and clothing and a car and all the good things of life. They're working very hard. In this regard, I will read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, text 15. Namang dushkushino murha prapadyante naradhamaha maya paritya jnana asurang bhavam ashritaha. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 15. The translation is as follows. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender to me. Now, this is a very important verse, as Srila Prabhupada said, he often quoted it. It's a long purport, which I recommend you study, but now I'm just going to read part of it, which is describing the murha. The murha means a fool. So these are four kinds of foolish people who do not surrender to Krishna. So the murha, the description is given here. The murhas are those who are grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burden. Remember, the question is, why are certain people working so hard? So grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burden. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and they do not want to part with them for the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass. No longer seen in Germany much, I guess, but it would have previously been central to the way of life, the ass. All over the world. This humble beast is made to work very hard by his master. The ass does not really know for whom he works so hard day and night. He remains satisfied by filling his stomach with a bundle of grass, sleeping for a while under fear of being beaten by his master, and satisfying his sex appetite at the risk of being repeatedly kicked by the opposite party. Do you see the parallel with the hard-working, dutiful, well-to-do, I won't say. The ass sings poetry and philosophy sometimes. Have you heard the ass? You don't see in Germany. Still in India in some places. It's mostly machines. Have you heard the ass singing poetry? Fades away. The sound fades. He starts off with a big sound and then no one's listening. And he just just fades away. This is the position of the foolish fruitive worker who does not know for whom he should work. He does not know that karma action is meant for yajna, sacrifice. Most often, those who work very hard day and night to clear the burden of self-created duties. Just see this term, the burden of self-created duties. In other words, there's no real need to work so hard. It's a burden, but they've created self-created duties. They say that they have no time to hear of the immortality of the living being. To such mudhas, material gains which are destructible are life's all in all. Destructible gains. A prime example of that is motor cars, of which Germany is very famous for its Mercedes-Benz and its BMW, Burma Verde, BMW. And then, what else? Volkswagen, that's at the lower level. And there are so many others also, which I can't remember. Porsche is also German. It didn't get bought out. There are so many of them. So, that's called, what's that called? Planned obsolescence. It's built, you could build a car, you buy one when you're 20 years old and you're still driving it when you're 70 years old. They can make them easily. But they build it in such a way that after a few years you have to buy a new one, because otherwise the companies wouldn't be making enough money. You have to buy a new car every few years, right? So material gains are destructible. Everything is destructible. Who's someone very rich in Germany? Any very rich person? Can't think of any? We can think of in... Richest person in Germany.
First in Germany has been the Aldi brothers, the founder of
supermarket.
The founder of Audi, that's another.
Aldi.
Aldi?
Supermarket.
It's a supermarket. Well, I didn't hear his name. There are so many rich people in the world. Bill Gates, who else? The Sultan of Brunei. There's that Mukesh Ambani, I think, is the richest person in India these days. Although you never know, because it's most of the riches is in the black, right? It's all in Switzerland or here and there. Anyway, there's so many rich people. But what happens at the time of death? How much can you bring with you? How many euros? Not one, nothing. Zipper, nothing, absolutely nothing. So, to such mudhas, the material gains which are destructible are life's all in all, despite the fact that the mudhas enjoy only a very small fraction of the fruit of labor. That's especially true for rich people. Because whether you're very rich or very poor, you can only eat a certain amount of food, right? What's enjoyment? You can only have a certain amount of sex. You can live in a very fancy house. Yeah, you can do. But after some time, if any of us were be transported into a big fancy palace, we think, oh, how nice. But then after a few days, you get used to it, and then there's no fun anymore in having it. Despite the fact that the mudhas enjoy only a very small fraction of the fruit of their labor, sometimes they spend sleepless days and nights for fruitive gain, right? Anxiety, how can I get more money? And when you have money, how can I keep my money? The tax man or tax woman, if we're going to be politically correct, is taking my money. Well, we don't say tax woman, right? Because the men only do the nasty things, right? And women only do nice things. So the tax man takes all the money, or the thieves take the money, or the inflation takes the money, or the business collapses. So although they may have ulcers or indigestion, they are satisfied practically with no food. They are simply absorbed in working hard day and night for the benefit of illusory masters. Ignorant of their real master, the foolish workers waste their valuable time serving mammon. You know what mammon means, Mr. Translator? You got that word? It's only used in the Bible and in the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Otherwise, it's a defunct word. It means materialistic gains. Unfortunately, they never surrender to the supreme master of all masters, nor do they take time to hear of him from the proper sources. The swine who eat the night soil. Do you know what night soil means? Night soil. It's not used anywhere except in Bhagavad Gita as it is. It means when you eat your food today, it comes out the other end processed the next day. Feces or what's a good word for that? Without a non-rude word. Anyway, that black or what? It depends on what you add. Black, yellow, brown, red stuff. That comes stool is yeah. It's not much used in English. Only in Prabhupada's books actually, or maybe doctors use it. Okay, so the pigs, they like to eat that. Not in Germany, the pigs don't eat that. They're not allowed to. They probably would if they had the chance. Oh, poor pigs in India. Now they're making all the proper toilets. So the pigs can only eat when people pass in the field. So what's going to happen to all the poor pigs? They're not going to get their breakfast. So the swine who eat the night soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish worker will untiringly continue to hear of the sense-enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world. That's a very poetic way of saying that people, they become enamored, they see the advertisement. Oh, go to the shop, get 20% off, buy two, get one free. New fashion, high heel shoes, what's new about that? High heel shoes, and then after 6 months, low heel shoes. And then after 6 months, middle heel shoes. And then thick heel shoes, thin heel. Oh, fashion, new fashion. But they have very little time to hear about the eternal living force that moves the material world. So that is a scathing indictment of the people who work very hard for money, without ever thinking, what's it all for? What's the purpose? What's the purpose of life? They never think of such things. According to this analysis of Bhagavad Gita, such people are foolish because, after all, the basic needs of the human beings are food, clothing, shelter, sex, ahara, nidra, bhaya, maitun, eating, sleeping. Ahara nidra bhaya, defending, which means shelter, protecting ourselves from the cold or the heat or the rain, and maitun, which means sex. Do you want to get in my bag there? You know, there are these notebooks. There's one with an orange cover. You better go to open the room. There's in my bag. There's a book this size with an orange cover, so you can bring that. So as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, there's no need to work so hard, actually. To get the basic necessities of life, there's no need to work so hard. Srila Prabhupada had a plan for farm communities in which devotees can live, produce their own food by the grace of Mother Earth and Krishna, and the balance time can be used for cultivating Krishna consciousness. But modern society has made a situation in which people have to work so hard. I remember going to school in the 1960s and 1970s. This was the pre-computer times. Computers in those days, I'd never seen one. Most people had never seen a computer. And we used to hear a computer is a thing which takes up the size of a room, and it gives out ticker tape. And very few people knew how to work that. But we learned that in future, thanks to computers, people will not have to work. And the one major problem of society will be that people will have too much leisure time and they won't know what to do. But believe it or not, you remember that? They taught you that in school also? They bluffed us all, right? But they dreamed up new things to do. Computers now, there's a whole industry of computers doing what? YouTube. Yeah, this should be on YouTube after a day or two also. Yeah, that's it. Please bring it. YouTube and what else? Games. Games, if you can make a good game, you can make yourself $1 billion. All kinds of things. Computer hacking, anti-hacking, and then anti-hacking, and anti-anti. It's like missiles, right? They have missiles and anti-missile missiles. Anti-anti-missile, whatever. It goes on. All this. So they dreamed up so many things to keep people more busy than ever. Just see. As Srila Prabhupada would say, just see. The foolishness of it all. Okay, I made some notes here. Oh, it comes under here. Yeah, okay. Now, if we consider what are the actual physical needs? Food, clothing, and shelter, right? And sex. Okay. Sex isn't absolutely required to survive, but most people have a need for that. But food is required to stay alive unless you're a great yogi. It's very unusual. Food, clothing needs to be produced. In some climates, clothing isn't needed, but in most climates, definitely in this climate, clothing is required. And shelter. That's required in almost all climates. So some effort has to be made to produce that. Right? Some work is required to produce all that. But actually, to produce food doesn't require a lot of hard work. For the last few years, I've been involved with various farm projects. And the devotees who are involved in those farm projects, when they go there, they become surprised how, with just a little effort, you can produce so much food. And to produce grains for the whole of society, for the whole of the community, usually just one or two families is enough to do that. It doesn't require the whole community. Because growing grains is a thing which is best done not individually. It's best done in a bigger way. And as far as vegetable, everyone can just keep a little vegetable patch, and with a little space you can grow all the vegetable you need and fruit and everything. And there are many parts, many places where even today in India and Sri Lanka, where there are trees with mangoes growing wild and jackfruits and avocados and all kinds of things. And the fruit just falls on the ground and you don't know what to do with it. At one of our farms I was just in South India, there are so many mangoes, and what to do with it all? There are not enough people and not enough people to eat them all. And then you could make, what are you going to do? You could make, how much pickle can you make? And they're just falling down and like that. Here, if you buy a mango, how much does a mango cost? €5?
$2.50
for one mango, and they're useless actually. But there you can how many do you want? Just pick them up and take them. So it doesn't require that much effort to produce food. And for housing, it's to build a house, a simple house, can be done without a lot of effort, and even without a lot of money, because if you build a, it depends on the area you're living in. Because if you live in Bengal, much of Bengal, you can build houses just from the mud, the clay all around you. And in different parts, I was just in Dwarka, on the west coast of India, where there's just stone. You just nowadays you have to pay for it. It all belongs to someone, but previously you could just cut the stone and make houses. On the east coast, in Orissa also, different kinds of stone, people make the houses. In there, I was in Karnataka, South India. It's a very simple thing to do, make houses from bamboo, that's all. And the climate is such that you don't need to protect yourself much from the cold or the heat. The climate in that place is very nice. So what we need to produce food for the whole of human society takes up far less energy than people have. Everyone has energy, right? You want to do something, right? Nahi kastik shanamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit. You want to do something. So people are, people often ask, or they used to ask our devotees when they saw us chanting in the streets, why don't you do something useful? With the idea you should be producing something, right? You should be doing something useful for human society. But then we find that in societies where they've organized their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then they try to do it in a more sophisticated way, and therefore we have factories and roads and complex tax systems. They want to do it in a more sophisticated way. And they invent all kinds of things for entertainment and sports. Sport is not useful. For exercise, maybe, get a little exercise, but the way it goes on at the present time, as a multi-billion, trillion-dollar industry, people watching the sports games, they don't actually add, in terms of the needs of human society, entertainers, sports people, they don't add anything. It's not a requirement. It's just some mental diversion, that's all. So, eating, sleeping, mating, under defending, you may need some people like police or army to defend you from people coming from outside who may attack you, or you may require from thieves or crazy people. So some protection, some people may be full-time dedicated to protection also. But most of the human society doesn't require even to work for food. That can be done by just a few people, or to work very little. And even those who are producing food, it's generally a few times a year that there's a lot of work. And the rest of the time of the year, there's not much. Just like, for instance, cultivating grains. Rice is quite a lot of work, but only at certain times of the year. Most of the time you're just looking at it as it's growing. There's planting, replanting, weeding, harvesting, threshing, so many things. Threshing goes on at home. So much of the time there's not that much work to do. You may have to chase the birds away if you're not very liberal. Otherwise they may eat most of the grains. But there really isn't that much work to do. And then, so what do people do with the rest of their energy? So, the Shastra says that we should engage that energy should primarily be diverted for understanding the real goal of life. That energy should not be wasted, but it should be directed at understanding the goal of life. And therefore, in our farm communities, we're making that arrangement where people, devotees, they do some work. Everyone has to work. It's not a place for lazy people. Laziness is not good. Excessive work is not good, and laziness is not good either. But the endeavor should be that everyone cooperates to help each other advance in Krishna consciousness. Now what we have here in this gathering here is people who are seriously interested in Krishna consciousness. I can understand you're all seriously interested in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, on Sunday afternoon, when you could be doing all kinds of things which are available to do, you've instead come here to hear a philosophical talk about the purpose of life and how to fulfill it. So that means you're seriously interested in Krishna consciousness. But you only get that opportunity one day a week, or not maybe half a day a week. But the farm communities that Srila Prabhupada envisaged, they are meant for giving everyone the opportunity to engage in Krishna consciousness 7 days a week and throughout the day, because rising early, that comes naturally when there's no electricity to pay the bills for the electricity, right? So if there's no electricity, you don't have to pay the bills. And at least in climates or in lands which are fairly close to the equator or in the tropics, the sunrise and sunset is pretty much the same time throughout the year. So by 6 o'clock, depending which part you're in, 6 o'clock or so the sun sets, and by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, automatically you're ready to rest. There's no electricity to keep you up. No TV to watch, no internet. So you naturally you sleep early, and then naturally you rise early. And every day, Mangal Arati, Hare Krishna. Every day, Mangal Arati. Every day, evening arati. Every day, twice a day, discussions of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. If you'd like to sit down, you're all standing there. You'd like to come in and sit down, there's plenty of space. Also, you'd like to come in and sit down? Maybe he doesn't understand. Oh, he does understand English, probably. Plenty of space. If you need a chair, there are chairs also. But we tend to be enamored by this society. We think that I have to work hard. I have to live like this. Now again, in our farm communities, it's not that the devotees are lazy. It's not that they're sitting around doing nothing. But they're doing work, because everyone has to do work at every moment. But that is centered on Krishna. And when they're working together, they're dressed as devotees with Vaishnav Tilak. It's all for Krishna, not for some boss. How many people here personally know their boss? The guy, you know, personally know your boss. Anyone else? The women should all lift their hand up. Should be their husband, right? But you don't follow that. You don't follow that in the West. That's not allowed anymore. To even think like that. Most people have no idea. They may not even know the name of their boss, right? It's all so impersonal. Bifale shevinu kripana durajana chapala shuka loba lagire. That's described. That bifale shevinu, working uselessly, means you get something but nothing of any real value. Bifale shevinu kripana durajana, for miserly rascals. That's who you're working for. What for? Chapala shuka loba lagire, for a little bit of temporary, flickering happiness. That's all. That is the situation. So Srila Prabhupada's brilliant idea, among his many brilliant ideas, all his ideas are brilliant, because they're all Krishna's ideas, was that why do you have to live like this? This modern civilization, it sucks the energy. Human life, the energy is meant for directing it toward Krishna. But the whole modern way of life, it sucks our energy so much so when people come back from work, they're drained. They have no strength to do anything else. Physically they may have some strength, but mentally they're drained. So much stress. you may not know your boss, but your immediate boss is squeezing you. Why? Because there's someone up there squeezing him. There's a whole parampara. Yeah. And everyone's thinking, I have to keep these guys down, otherwise they'll come up and step on my head. Right? If I'm nice to them, then they'll take advantage and get ahead of me. So it makes a horrible atmosphere. It's called progress, in one word. Do they still say that, progress? They used to talk about progress. Where are they progressing to? Nowhere. They're going nowhere. They're going to every, the whole society is going to hell. Generally, we're talking about the question, why do Germans work so hard? Well, it may be like that. They're people who have a certain, in a previous life, they have certain desires. So people with certain desires and mentality all get born together. We often hear that they're very intelligent. German people are very intelligent. Materially, maybe. They're good at producing motor cars and all kinds of machines, right? They're very good at producing machines. But according to this analysis, they may be materially intelligent, but spiritually a long, long way away from even thinking about the goal of life. And maybe that's why that's another reason why they work so hard, because they are intelligent, and underneath it all, they know it's all useless. But if you keep on working, then you forget it, right? It's like, really, that's why they say workaholic. It's like an alcoholic. Why does someone become an alcoholic? Because he wants to forget all the stress and the misery. So workaholic means you keep on working, because if you stop, you'll have to think about everything else in your life apart from work, and they don't want to do that. It's too frightening. I was recently reading something that many people, shortly before they die, they just lose interest in everything. Even the things that used to be of great interest to them previously. They may have been their whole life a cricket fanatic or a soccer fanatic here in Germany. But they just lose interest. And they lose interest in their friends and their family. And I was thinking, why is that? Because why is it like that? I was thinking because they've come to the realization they're going to die soon, and they realize their whole life has been useless. And there's no meaning to it. We don't see that so much, I'll compare again with India, because one major reason is, a major difference in the outlook is that people, even though they don't know the science of reincarnation, but they do believe in it. So for the Indian, the Hindus and Jains and Sikhs and whatever, they know it's not all over. It's not a massive depression of entering as a big zero. They know that they're going to come back again. So underneath it's a lot of depression. And if you see, I've seen here in Germany and so many countries, old people. No life, nothing to live for, right? Because all their life, the only thing to live for has been for work and sense gratification. That's all. And when you're old, you can't work and you can't have sense gratification. There's nothing left. Just left with nothing. And no one cares for them. No one ever cared for them. They never cared for anyone. Very sad life. Even materially speaking, it's a very, very sad life. People who are religious, they don't usually go through this kind of depression, because they believe that they're going to be carried on to a better future after death. But the results of working so hard without thinking are simply misery. Of course, Germany is famous also for philosophers. but their philosophy is just bouncing ideas around without any clear understanding. Yeah, very, very complex systems of thought which really go nowhere. And philosophy in the Western context, in the Western, at least in English language, what they call philosophy means Western philosophy. They just the word, or if you go in the universities to study philosophy, they just act as if there was no such thing as philosophy in India or China. For them, philosophy began with the Greeks, and then it's just Western philosophy. That's all. But they don't really know anything, because they start bottom up. Bottom up means beginning with Descartes, cogito ergo est, that I think, therefore. What can we know? They don't accept that there is truth, and we can connect to it, and truth we can receive it from scripture. They don't accept that. So it various speculations. Like a dog chasing his tail. Have you seen a dog chasing the tail? They can never catch it. So in the same way, philosophy in the Western context means to try to find the truth, but you never find it. And practically the whole endeavor is from the beginning agnostic anyway, in the sense that they think that, well, you can never, it's accepted as an axiom, although it's unprovable, that you can never actually find the truth. But philosophy means to search for the truth. So that's another whole waste of time. Philosophy in the Western context means to search for the truth, but at the beginning you understand you can never find it. Now, isn't that a stupid idea? You dedicate yourself so much mental energy to finding to try to find something which you know you're never going to find. Wunderbar. And if someone says they found the truth, he must be wrong. Because you can't find the truth. How do you know you can't find the truth? Well, there's no answer to that. It's just accepted as an axiom. So the intelligence that makes one work very hard, it's a desperate intelligence based on desperation, that there's nothing really there, but I have to pretend that it's there. We have to share in, it's our duty to share, as good Germans or whatever, it's our duty to work hard and share in the mass illusion that we should work hard to get money and develop the economy and develop the nation and the whole thing goes on like that. And what's at the end of it? Nothing. Nothing for everyone. There is something, actually, but they don't know what it is. It's called punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Again and again getting born, and again dying. But if we tell them this, they're not very interested to hear. It's all described in Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. Namang duskrishino murha prapadyante naradhamaha maya parita jnana asurang bhavamashritaha. Persons who are the lowest of mankind, very foolish, who may be very intelligent and learned, but not actually, just like you're saying, the philosophers, or someone who can produce very sophisticated computer systems. They may be very intelligent, but they're not really very intelligent, because their intelligence is misapplied to things which are ultimately of no benefit to them. So, laziness is not encouraged in Bhagavad Gita. Not that we're saying be lazy. Laziness is a symptom of tamagun. Nidra alasya. these two words are given in Bhagavad Gita, nidra, sleep, and laziness, they're symptoms of tamagun, the mode of ignorance. So that is not good. But the point is, we should know that what Krishna had to teach Arjuna is that we should know why we are working. Why are you working? Why are you working? What should we work for? Yagyartad karmano nyatra. One, as Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport to this verse, or to that Namang Dushkriti no Mudha verse, and that's stated in Bhagavad Gita, that one should work for the sake of yagya. Yagya means sacrifice. Yagya means Vishnu. One should work for the sake of Krishna. So if one works with that spirit, then his work frees him from material bondage. Yagyata karmano nyatra loka yang karma bandhanaha. If one works for the sake of Vishnu, then that work does not bind him in this material world. That's what Arjuna is afraid of, that by working, you create reactions. And if you create reactions, then you have to enjoy or suffer them in future lives. Therefore, Arjuna wanted to stop working so that he would not produce any reactions. But Krishna told him that you have to work. Even if you try not to work, you have to work. But when you work for Vishnu, then one becomes free from sinful reactions. So that is the secret of work. So working hard is all right if you're working for Krishna. Balanced life, that's recommended by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Everything should be balanced. That not too much work, not too much food, not too much sleep, not too little. What is that verse? Yukta ahara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapnava bodhasya, yogo bhavati dukaha. The one who eats not too much, not too little, sleeps not too much and not too little, makes works and endeavors in various ways, but not too much and not too little, such a person can conquer all miseries by practicing yoga. So it's very practical. What Krishna is teaching is very practical. That work, 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 work without any direction, clear direction, that is useless. One should know who to work for. And the conclusion is that we should work for Krishna. Yad karoshi, everything we do. Yad karoshi, yad ashnasi, yad jahoshi, tadasi, yad tapasyasi, kaunteya, tat karushva madarpanam, Krishna says. Whatever activities you perform, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away in charity, whatever austerities you perform, Krishna says, do it for me. So it's possible to do a job in a factory or an office or whatever and do it for Krishna. It's possible. By offering the results of that work in terms of money, you can donate for this preaching institution here. You can donate. Actually, householders who are earning money, they should. It's required for them to donate for pious causes. Otherwise, all the work, they get all the reactions of their work. You know that? Did anyone ever teach you that? It's there very much in religious cultures throughout the world. The Christian churches, they have donation boxes, and the Hindu temples, they have donation boxes, and I presume in the mosques they have also, because people know that I'm not supposed to keep everything for myself. It's not, I have to give something for the spiritual cause. Because if one doesn't do, if you just keep all the money to yourself, if your prayers are for God but the money is for me, then you have to take all the reactions of the work. So by giving for spiritual causes, one is freed from the reactions. So it is possible to work in this hellish demoniac society, which is called advanced civilization, and also be Krishna conscious. But one really has to work at it. To be Krishna conscious also requires work. One is required to, in the ideal life of Krishna consciousness, one should rise early every day, have Mangalarti, chanting japa, all these things. And in the evening also. That means not too much work in the day, because otherwise people have no energy when they come back. So it is possible to be Krishna conscious, even in this highly materialistic society. But Srila Prabhupada also very much wanted to organize so that everyone, not just a few brahmacharis, the grihasthas, married people also, can live their life in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. So there's a little discussion of why do Germans work so hard? You can go and ask. If you ask, they may take it as an insult, huh? as if you're impinging on their sacred activity. What do you think, Doyal Govind? You're the one who brought this up to me.
I think you're right, that we somehow bother them by this question.
Why are you bothering me? Why are you making me think? I don't want to think, I just want to work. Work, 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 work.
Work hard.
Work hard. In Bengaluru, South India, major city of South India, I used to see, about 2 years ago, there used to be an advertisement throughout the city. I don't know what it was an advertisement for, because I just see it, but I didn't bother. When you see it, you can't help seeing it, but I didn't bother to take a second look at it. Work hard, party harder. They're advertising something, I don't know what. The idea that you work hard all week, and when you get a little time off, then you drink and whatever else they do. Party harder. So that there's never any break here. It's just high adrenaline life throughout the week. So that city, Bangalore, as it's better known, is famous for IT. What's that? Information technology. And another flourishing business there is mental hospitals. Yeah, because they bring people in from the small towns of South India who are very innocent, make them work, make them drink, make them have sex, which then is not in their culture, and make them just completely try to rewire them, and then work, 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 bong. And then all the money they earned, if they didn't spend it in partying, it all goes in the mental hospital. Cruel, very cruel society. There's no love. Demoniac, yeah, actually demoniac. There's no love. And I've seen, I was in one hospital in Bangalore a few years ago, and one doctor said to me, he said, look, this man, he just came in and dumped his mother here and went away. He said, you see, the man should, the family members, that's the normal thing, they should stay and look after the needs of their elderly parents who are in the hospital. They have no time, no interest. They just dumped them. Oh, the whole of South India, we find there are so many old people's homes coming up, because what happened, one generation ago, so many, mostly Brahmin families, they, with not much money, they sacrificed a lot, taking loans and everything to get their children well educated. The children went to America, they're earning plenty of money, or Germany, mostly in America. And they don't want to come back. And so the old people, now they're old, they only had one or two children because that's what they were taught. Hamdo hamare do, that was it. We're two, we have two, or hamdo hamare ek. I sometimes joke, you'll only get this if you know Hindi. Hamdo hamare do, ek beti or ek kutta. Wohi hamare. That's it, that's modern Indian life. There has to be a dog, right? Otherwise you're not civilized. So, So they thought that we made our child a success, but the child's being a success in America, and they send the money so that they can die in some old, they call it a vridh ashram, an ashram for old people, but actually it's just a miserable place where they die, and that's all. People have no time for their children, they're just busy working. My mother got sick. What an inconvenience. I have important work. Just dump her in the hospital and then get back to work. Switch off your phone so the doctor doesn't bother me. Horrible, horrible life. Please don't lean on Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa. Any question, comment, protest, please voice it now. No rotten eggs. Tomatoes are acceptable. Okay, you have to tell a joke sometimes. Yes, please.
You speak a lot about hard work.
Well, I did in this talk, yeah, I spoke.
German people and other parts of the world. But Krishna said in this verse that we are conditioned by our mode.
Yeah, we're conditioned by the modes of material nature. The modes that we have acquired. Karyate hi avasham karma. Sarva prakriti jaya guna. Yeah.
When Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, he also said we can be released from these three modes, Kama, Raja and Sattva,
yeah,
only if we take shelter by him.
Yeah.
But then Lord Chaitanya came and he has summarized the whole thing in the Sankirtan movement. So the Sankirtan movement can turn all these hardworking people in Germany and all over the world, because this is what his movement is all about.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is about Sankirtan. Yeah, that's true. But it doesn't deny or nullify the teachings of Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, but he summarized it by making it easier for us.
He summarized it by making it easier for us. That's true, but still, we have to work.
Yeah, must work in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so it's not that the teachings of Bhagavad Gita are to be forgotten. We do Sankirtan, but there also have to be people producing food, building houses, teaching, doctors. So it's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the Hare Krishna chanting, but that, again, it doesn't nullify the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, which is a very practical guide on how to live in this world. Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita, yagyartat karmano niyatra. One should work for the sake of yagya. In the Kali Yuga, yagyai sankirtana prayer, yajanti hi sumedasa. In this Kali Yuga, the yagya or the sacrifice, the only one which is effective is the sankirtan yagya. But still, yagyartat karmano niyatra, one has to work for the sake of yagya. So how to work is described in Bhagavad Gita, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also quoted Bhagavad Gita, you can find. He didn't, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to chant Hare Krishna doesn't mean he was non-philosophical or that he was divorced from Shastra. Rather, he established that everything he taught was based on Shastra. Yeah, please.
I have a question which is not so spiritual, but it's related to work. I hope it's here.
Well, let's see. If I don't like it, I'll throw it out.
Because I'm thinking about, I work in IT.
But actually, it's not very spiritual, but it's related to work. The whole Bhagavad Gita is related to work. Yeah. The whole question is to work or not to work, and then how to work. So it's all related, actually. There's nothing that Bhagavad Gita doesn't cover, at least in a general way. It covers everything in life. Yeah, please.
Thank you.
You work in IT, yeah.
And I got the possibilities to work in two companies. One company paid more, but this company making IT for Lidl and
for what, sorry?
For some supermarket.
For supermarkets.
And they have, of course, meat. Inside?
Yeah, yeah.
And the other company?
Go on, what's the other company?
The other company works for automotive industry.
But it's very difficult in this modern world to be completely detached from anything which is not sinful. The automated, the working for the automobile company, people will use that where they'll make refrigerated trucks for carrying meat. Isn't it? It's impossible to avoid. What's a clean job? You work in the bank, it's a clean job. You're just dealing with figures and money, but the money is used for all bad things. It's impossible to avoid, practically. Even the computer, even the automobile industry, that they're destroying the earth by bringing out the oil and making the factories. The only way to be complete, it's not possible to be completely away from all of this, but if we live simply on the land and produce our own food, then we can be away from this as far as possible. Otherwise, give 50% of your income to Krishna, if you can. If the government probably already takes 50%, I don't know how much they take. That's one of Prabhupada's toughest teachings, right? And otherwise, but of course there are limits also. That doesn't mean that, well, you can't avoid it, so I could get a good job earning plenty of money as a butcher. You wouldn't do that directly. It's a tough question. It's the kind of question that makes us bring out the Bhagavad Gita and see how to apply it. That's why we also need gurus, acharyas, who can tell us to act in a certain, how we should act in a certain situation, because every single situation can't be covered by the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, because life is very complex. How exactly do you work in such a situation? You work for a company which is, you're making software systems for supermarkets that sell meat. I'll tell you something. Here's a true story. Srila Prabhupada in Fiji, small island somewhere a long way away. One man from there had heard about Srila Prabhupada and become very interested in Krishna consciousness. Indian man, half the population of Fiji is Indian. So he and his brothers, they were the biggest supermarket chain. They owned the business in all of Fiji. So then Srila Prabhupada went there, and this man and his wife wanted to be initiated by Prabhupada. So he initiated them. And then they said that, well, I guess we'll have to stop selling meat in our shops. Right? Prabhupada said, you just go on with it for now. He said, you can go on selling it. Srila Prabhupada knew that it was a joint family business, and that not all the family members were on the same level of commitment. So Prabhupada said, go on with it for now. You can go on. And in course of time, when the other brothers, they became more understanding, and they also became initiated, then they all together, they decided to stop it. Interesting, huh? Does that mean that Srila Prabhupada condones selling meat? I can imagine they didn't sell beef. I can imagine, I don't know for sure, but I presume they didn't sell beef. But it doesn't mean that Srila Prabhupada condoned it, but he was just very careful about dealing with the situation. And of course, Srila Prabhupada could absorb the sinful reactions from that. That's another consideration. Because if Srila Prabhupada said that you can go on selling the meat, that means that there are sinful reactions from that. But Srila Prabhupada was prepared to take that. You have to be a very powerful acharya, sadhu, to do that. So that's just some practical consideration. I'll give another example on a smaller scale. One of my disciples in London, Indian, Gujarati, again, he had a small, as many Gujaratis in London had at the time, small newspaper shop. So on the outside they had little notice board where people can pin up notices, advertisements, little advertisements like children's bicycle for sale, £50 ONO, on-air offer, phone number, this and that. And they'd pay, I don't know, £2 a week or whatever to put that notice there. So I looked, and some of them were for prostitutes. This beautiful blah, 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 phone this number. And I told them, hey, look, this isn't good. They took it out. They lost a little income. What to do? They lost it. I could have said, okay, do it, whatever income you give to Krishna. No. Here's another one I'll tell from Bangalore again. That one of my disciples, he's a leading spiritual figure among many of the devotees in that area, not in that particular. So he was asked by a woman devotee who was older now, but in her youth had been a model and this and that. And she asked him that she'd been asked to do modeling for, in now she's older, for some cream that is supposed to make you beautiful when you're old, something like that, take the wrinkles away. And it was it's all bluffing, but they don't take, but anyway, it's the selling dreams, that's all. So and it was a 1 crore contract, which is a lot of money. I mean, even here, how much? You don't earn 1 crore a year, do you?
120,000 euros.
How much does that translate into? That's not even 1 crore. It's less than in a year. So anyway, it's a lot of money there. And this devotee said, "No, don't do it," because it's these kind of questions come up. You won't find the answer directly in Bhagavad Gita. You have to apply that. And even how one, the instruction that may be given to one devotee may be given differently to someone else according to their level of understanding, their ability to do it, their own personal situation. That is why we're supposed to have gurus who can guide in this, in all the nuanced situations, complex situations. Anything else? Yeah.
Thank you very much for guiding us. So if somebody wants to join the farm you were talking about, what is the pre-necessary, the requirements?
What are the requirements to join the farm?
Okay.
You don't need any university degree. It might be a setback if you have one. Because then all your family members will say, you have a degree, why are you on our farm? You could earn lots of money. It does help to be an Indian citizen, because otherwise there are maybe visa difficulties. We really, really require to do this here in the West. 50% of Prabhupada's mission, forgotten, abandoned. It's a big topic. It should be done. Whoever does it can establish such communities, they're going to get lots of mercy from Srila Prabhupada. That's for sure. If we had these communities now, it would be very impressive, would it not? With people living, working the land, living very simply, with high values, simple living, high thinking, it would be very, very impressive. It's a big topic. We're preaching, but our preaching would seem to many people to be theoretical, because we don't have anything to demonstrate. In the early days, we were just beginning. But by now we should have established communities so people can come and see how we can live. Seeing is believing. People don't believe that you can live so simply until they see it. And they see how happy the devotees are. In the first community we established, some devotees, I went there just when they were just moving to the land, and then I came back again after 6 months. I'd been around traveling here and there. And the one couple there who were instrumental in establishing the community, I told them, your faces have become black and bright. Black from the sun, because they're outside, they're not inside all the time in some air-conditioned office or house, and bright from happiness, actually. There were serious devotees before, but they were living in the city, and you may be a serious devotee, but you have very, percentage-wise, you have very little time to dedicate to Krishna consciousness, because you have to work, 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 and on and on. So you don't have much time. Whereas at the community, they're with devotees all the time. Everything they're doing is directly for Krishna, for Srila Prabhupada's pleasure. And the mercy comes. Then you feel happy. It's a science. Krishna consciousness is a science. The more we apply ourselves to it, the more Krishna reciprocates and we get the mercy of Krishna. And evam prasanna manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogataha, being connected with Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, naturally our mind becomes full of happiness. It works.
So as we were driving here, we were talking about Manushandar. So is it also kind of the system in the farms?
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada, yeah, it's not just farms, the idea is to establish Varnashram Dharma, yeah. It's society, it's a whole social system.
That's also kind of established in these farms we were talking about.
We're beginning that also. We're beginning that, yeah. Right. Establishing. Kshatriya is the difficult one. Otherwise, Brahmanas, Vaishyas, Shudra. Even devotees, if they understand philosophically, they don't mind to be designated as Shudras. Even there's some devotees, because Srila Prabhupada said, actually a Vaishnava is above the position of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, but to show people how society should be divided, we can take different roles. So devotees, they don't mind, with that understanding, they don't mind being designated as Shudras, because that's the work they're doing, even though they could be preaching as Brahmanas. The difficult thing is to find the Kshatriya. And the role for women also, Stri Dharma. That might be difficult in the modern West because of the very prominent and brainwashed ideas of feminism and men and women are all the same, but at least in India up to the present time, the traditional roles in which women play a subdued and generally submissive role, that's accepted. At least on our farm communities, they're happy to do that. They choose to go along with that. The couples can't join unless both the men and the women are fully into it. So they're willing for, they want that. They're happy for that. It's a big topic. You come and see. You can get some idea.
I hope so.
Yeah? Come and spend some days. We have so many visitors, all the time, throughout the year, we have so many visitors. Because devotees and others are surprised and happy to see how people can live like this. And it gives some idea that you don't have to live in this ugra karmic life. You don't have to live like that. There's this illusion set up that everyone has to, you just have to go through this whole system, but you don't. It's not required. There's a big thing now where people go out and they film Aboriginal societies and they're fascinated by this, right? How can people live like that? But by the grace of Krishna, we can live simply and think of Krishna.
Yeah.
I'm the biggest anomaly when I visit those communities. You know why? Because I'm writing my books, for which I need a computer. It's the handle of the axe to cut down the tree. You know that analogy? That if you have the axe head, which cuts the tree, you need a handle. But how do you take the branch from the tree and make the handle of the axe, and with that you use it to cut the tree? So we're using the technology to give the message that all this is useless. Yeah, please come and visit. So far we only, there's something beginning like that. We have something going on in Czech Republic. Just beginning something. The most difficult thing is not growing food. That's the relatively easy part. The most difficult thing is bringing the devotees together, cooperation and everything. I think that might be more difficult in the West. I would think so. Because of this rugged individualism. And I said the history of ISKCON also, with guru fall downs and this and that. People, it's hard to have faith. Mm. Yeah, go on. Please.
I have a question for Sivan Ashram Dharma. I read and heard different things, and sometimes I understood it like this. If a Shudra practices, for example, Krishna consciousness, he lives actually the life of a Brahmana, and he's not anymore a Shudra. And my question is, how is the difference from the activities and from the consciousness?
Yeah, a Shudra, if someone is a Shudra and he practices Krishna consciousness, then as this lady was saying, Manchayovyabicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Whatever situation one may be in, by practicing Krishna consciousness, he transcends the modes of nature. So Brahmanas are in the mode of goodness, Kshatriyas in the mode of passion, Vaishyas in the mixed mode of passion and ignorance, and Shudras in ignorance. But if you become a Vaishnava, then even if you're by caste or by work, you're a Shudra, then you're in a higher position than a Brahmana. But still by one's work and one's conditioned nature, that one still carries, not that when you pick up beads, all of a sudden you immediately become fully Krishna conscious. One still has one's conditioning. So, it may continue. Someone who by conditioning or mentality and by work works as a Shudra, but who is a Vaishnava, should not be considered a mundane Shudra. He's on a level higher than a non-Vaishnava Brahmana. His spiritual level is higher, but still within society there's required organization. So there have to be Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras for the organization of society. It's Krishna's system of organizing society. There are various ideas such as communism, socialism, capitalism, determinism, fascism, and so many systems. Krishna's system is Varnashram Dharma. There's nothing wrong with being a Shudra. Everyone has to do some work. It's considered lower than that of a Brahmana. The work is considered lower. Just like the example is given, the head is like the Brahmanas, the chest and the arms is like the Kshatriyas, the stomach is like the Vaishyas, and the legs are like the Shudras. So if you cut the head off, the whole thing's finished. And that's the intelligent part, the Brahmanas, and that's modern society. There are no proper Brahmanas with clear spiritual intelligence to guide, and therefore the whole society is like a decapitated body wildly flailing around. But the legs are also important. You can go on living without legs, but it's certainly very helpful to have legs. So in the same way, Shudras are also required in society. It's and in any situation, Svei Svei Kamani Abhirata Sang Siddhin Labhate Nara. Krishna says in Gita that whatever situation one's in, by performing his work, he can achieve perfection. He says this twice. Again, he says, Swakarmana tamabhyacha siddhim vindati manavaha. By performing one's work and worshipping Krishna, everyone can achieve perfection. So a shudra, or say in the modern context, someone who's working with a drill, drilling the ground like this, they may be considered blue-collar worker in the modern context. Then they may be considered shudra, but if you're seriously dedicated to Krishna, then you're spiritually higher than a brahmana who's not worshipping Krishna. But still, one can go on working. It's not that now that I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I have to change my work. Not required. Anything else? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Time is going on, Maharaj, so I have to thank you so much.
Nahi kascha kshanamapi. Kshana means time, right? Tick, 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 tick. Kshana. We have to do something. So now it's time for something else.
For the Gora Aarti, actually. Okay. And the singer praise, but I see you have your wonderful books here.
Oh yeah, I have a few books here. That's what I was talking about. I am writing books.
Yes, and I don't know whether you sign these books.
Yeah, yeah, I sign them. Yeah.
So I really recommend that later Maharaj gives some personal signature into the books, and please give
Well, you can take books now if you like, and they're available. I have here available in English. Deutsch, did I say that okay?
Yes.
Okay. Or Hindi maybe, ek copy. Krishna Bhavanamrit me Brahmacharya. Koi Brahmacharya hai.
Takes books, he gets also prasadam from your hands.
They do, what is it?
These are some sweet balls.
Okay. So one Hindi book, we have four German books and different English books available. And please take them.
I can really recommend the Ramayana, actually, and Rasikananda about the saints, and of course the Indian epic Ramayana you have brought us, very nice. And about Srila Prabhupada, so please.
That topic I was talking about, the traditional rural life that's discussed in the Glimpses, this book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. The India that I saw, that you haven't seen. Well, I used to travel in the 1970s and 1980s in the villages in Bengal, and I saw the traditional life. You don't know anything about it. Brought up in the modern cities in India. There are many good things we can learn. So some of the things are there in that book. And there are so many. Yeah, oh, there are some. That's for some books?
That's for some books.
Okay, but the only thing is that all these books are yours. They're the temple's books. So the money goes back to you.
No, we give it to you then. Whatever comes in as a donation.
Okay.
Coming to you.
And whatever money comes to me goes into our farms. We need lots of money to buy land and build houses on the farms and support our gurukuls. We have many boys. We have so many boys we're teaching in the Gurukul. Very nice. Yeah, so if any of you would like to visit any of our communities in India, please let me know. And I'll tell you where you can go. We have now in Punjab, Gujarat, Telangana, Andhra Pradesh, and Karnataka. And we have one more in Tamil Nadu. But it's a farm, but it's not really a community. We're farming, but there's no developed community there. So that doesn't count so far. Okay, sweets, sweets, sweets. Sweet balls, Ladu, German Ladus.